A missed paycheck is more than just a paycheck. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio, who's on assignment. In the Senate yesterday, two attempts to reopen the government failed. One included funding for the president's border wall, the other did not. And today, 800,000 federal workers will miss their second paycheck since the partial government shutdown began 35 days ago. Now, no paycheck means more than just workers not getting their salary. It also means they will miss all those automatic contributions made on their behalf by their employer, the government, things like health insurance premiums. And that is creating some problems. Marketplace's Marielle Segarra talked to some workers.
Mandy Ranslau would like to go to her eye doctor appointment next month, but she's a federal worker and she's not sure if she'll be able to keep her vision insurance. The government deducts her premiums from her paycheck. That is, when she gets one. But during a shutdown, after three missed paychecks, she has to pay the insurance company directly or lose her coverage.
I guess it would depend on how much it costs. I mean, right now, my focus is really just paying my rent so I don't get evicted.
Something else that happens during a shutdown? Workers are not contributing to their flexible spending accounts, and they can't get reimbursed for medical costs. That was an issue for Heather Nadler, who also works for the federal government.
I had the flu and then pneumonia, and so I had to pay for, like, the doctor's visits and the prescriptions and the, you know, chest x-rays and all that stuff out of pocket.
One thing federal workers are keeping during the shutdown, even though they're not paying the premiums, their basic health insurance. I'm Marielle Segarra for Marketplace.
Now, as we've talked about before, there's a lot of data that's not being produced during the partial shutdown of the federal government. So you've got your factory orders, construction spending, retail sales, inflation, the list goes on. And just today, we won't be getting housing starts, nor will we receive data around durable goods, items like cars, home appliances, and manufacturing equipment. Why do we care about durable goods? Here's Marketplace's Erica Barros.
Investors make some key decisions based on the durable goods report. If those orders are up, that's a sign manufacturers are optimistic about future demand. That drives where investors put their money. But if the data shows a dip in purchases, that suggests uncertainty in the economy and makes investors pull back on investing. In this case, where there is no data, most likely they'll stall investment until a report is out. But one consequence, down the line, that may mean slowing of economic growth, leading to job loss.
Marketplace's Erica Barris. We're telling the story of missing government economic data across our platforms today. So to hear more, you can check out marketplace.org and tune into Marketplace later today. Let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is up 0.4%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are also up in the 0.7 to full percent range, with the Dow future up 178 points. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.73%. And the German DAX is up 1.5%. That is despite the fact that the German government revised downward its forecast for economic growth in 2019 from 1.8% GDP growth down to just 1%. The European Central Bank also confirmed it intends to keep interest rates at record lows, at least through the summer. The CDC recently reported that fertility rates in the U.S. have been falling for several years. And it turns out there's a connection with the economy. When we run into economic trouble, like during the Great Recession, fertility declines. But demographers have been scratching their heads on this one. We've more or less recovered from the Great Recession, but fertility is still falling. We've been speaking with experts about what this trend means for the U.S., and today we're talking to Hans-Peter Kohler, demographer and professor of sociology at UPenn. Good morning, Professor Kohler.
Good morning.
So fertility rates in the U.S. have been going down for the past 3 years. People expected fertility to increase as we recovered from the Great Recession. How does the U.S. compare in this way with other developed countries?
So fertility rates actually in the U.S. some time ago were exceptionally high. And then surrounding the kind of Great Recession, that changed dramatically. Now, that is broadly shared with many other countries, including some countries that invest heavily into families and family-friendly policies. And the kind of end of the recession hasn't gone necessarily along with a recovery of fertility rates, despite the fact that declining fertility rates were often attributed to the consequences of the recession.
Is the decline in fertility in the U.S., the decline in fertility in some high-income countries. Is that even a problem?
I would say at the level we're observing it in the U.S., it is not a problem. If the U.S. had South Korean, Japanese, or Italian fertility rates, arguably the pressure to do something about this might be higher.
When we look at other countries that maybe do have a problem with their birth rates, first, why is it a problem for them, and how have they gone about dealing with that problem?
Many of the countries that have very low fertility also have much lower levels of immigration, and immigration is obviously one of the adjustment mechanisms by which countries respond. So there are lots of policies that, on the superficial level, may sound like appealing, like providing financial incentives for having children, so forth, but our media campaigns that one should have children, and mostly they don't work. So the set of policies for which there's some evidence that they work are pertain to increasing compatibility of parenting and labor force participation policies, increasing early childhood investment through daycare provision that allows mothers also to return to the labor market relatively quickly. For these type of policies, there is some evidence that they might actually work and help kind of revert this trend or sustain at least a moderately below replacement fertility.
Hans-Peter Koehler is a demographer and professor of sociology at the University of Pennsylvania. It was good to talk to you.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Our executive producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Miguel Contreras. Our engineer is Brian Allison. And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.